Good morning and welcome to Assets and Aging, Affording the Future, the live local show that's all about the issues of aging. Who takes care of me when I'm ill? How do I make decisions for myself? Who pays? Who doesn't pay? Who's going to help out? Who's not going to help out? All of the things that impact every family as we begin to deal with loved ones and family and friends as we all get older. And who's going to manage all of that? Who's responsible? Who has the authority to do the things that have to be done? Glad to have you with us. 18 years here on KFBK. Every Sunday for 18 years. The longest running show in California, possibly the country, on the issues of aging. I'm just so glad to have you with us. So much to talk about, so much to do. Number, you know, there's lots of ways to get a hold of me. Oh, let me get this out of the way first. I got so much to talk about. I'm trying to talk and read notes at the same time. So I have to stop doing that now. Remember, I'm not an attorney. I don't practice law. I don't give legal advice. If you want legal advice, you should consult an attorney, preferably one that knows what the heck they're doing. I have a California insurance license, a legal document assistant license recorded in Sacramento County, California. I'm a notary. I'm not securities licensed. Don't want to be, because then I can tell you the truth. And I cannot snake a drain. Well, actually, I can snake a drain. A small drain. Not a big one. So I have to say that all the time. Again, everything we talk about here is my opinion only. And should not be taken as any form of legal or tax or any other kind of advice. There's lots of ways to get a hold of me. Bob Scrivano. One is you can just call me. You can call my office, 800-999-8007, 800-999-8007. You just call my office, leave me a message, I'll call you back. You can also go to my website. My website, write this down, is assets, A-S-S-E-T-S, and A-N-D, aging, A-G-I-N-G, assetsandaging.com. That's pretty simple. Assetsandaging.com. And if you go there, you'll find all kinds of interesting stuff. For instance, all my archived radio shows and podcasts are there. Yes, I do a podcast every Wednesday at noon that's live on my website. You can also go look at my archived podcasts and radio shows. They're all there. You can send me an email if you have a question. You can sign up for an upcoming workshop. I do at least one workshop a month, sometimes more, and they're listed right there on the opening page, the landing page of my website. You can sign up for my free email newsletter. You can do all of that when you open up assetsandaging.com. As you scroll down, you'll find place after place after place where you can get information and answers to questions. So if you're dealing with a loved one who's struggling, if you're trying to figure out the answer to the two questions, who's going to pay and who's going to take care of me or that loved one, Assets and Aging is the place to be. I've been doing this for somewhere between 25 and 30 years, a long time, folks. So you're going to want to stick around. We've got lots to talk about today. If you get a chance, again, listen to my podcasts or radio shows, past radio shows. Get the information you need so that you can be protected. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about being protected versus being unprotected. When it comes to long-term care, there are two protected groups in America and one unprotected group in America. And I want you to stay with me as I go through this for the next, 20 minutes or so. When it comes to long-term care, first of all, when I'm talking about long-term care, I'm talking about in-home care, assisted living, boarding care, continuing care, retirement communities, nursing homes, all the places that we receive care as we get older. As I said, I think on last week's show, a recent article that somewhere is in my stack of stuff I have here, that four out of every 10 Americans is a caregiver. 4 out of 10. I mean, that's a fairly large number when you stop it and think about it. 4 out of 10. It's a large number. And the information about it is everywhere. This morning I opened the Wall Street Journal up, and at the bottom of the personal journal, this is an article called "A Son Cares for His Aging Mother as Roles Change." It was an interesting article, and I may comment on it later. But I want to. It's everywhere. It's happening in your family. It's happening to the people you know. Long-term care is happening all around us, and it's not going to become less of an issue. It's going to become more of an issue because everybody's getting older. The baby boomers are all getting older. They need more help. It's just a fact of life. There's no way around it. So I want to talk about, as we look at long-term care, I want to talk about the two different classes of people. Unprotected and protected. If you've got $50 million in the bank, you're protected against the costs of long-term care. It's a non-issue for you. You got $50 million in the bank. If you've got $20,000 a month of income, or $25,000 or $30,000 a month of income, long-term care is not an issue for you. You are protected. You're protected. You can afford it. Any form of long-term care I mentioned, you can afford, so you're protected because of your assets. If you have nothing, you're protected. You can get government benefits. You can get food stamps, or now it's called CalFresh. You can get subsidized housing. You can get all. If you have nothing, you're protected against the ravages of long-term care. You can get help in assisted living if you're low income. You can get help with daycare if you're low income. The unprotected class is the one in the middle. So there's two protected classes, those at the very top end and those at the very bottom end. And then in the middle is the unprotected class, the group of people who lose billions of dollars a year, spend billions and billions and billions of dollars a year on long-term care, not only in actual money, but in lost wages for the caregiver, in deterioration of the caregiver mentally and physically, in the actual costs of care, in the tens, if not hundreds of billions of dollars a year in the United States. Those are the people that are unprotected. Those are the people from whom the state of California in the last 20 years has ripped out of their estates after they died somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.5 billion that went back into the general fund. The people at the two ends of the spectrum didn't have that problem. The people in the middle, the unprotected class, are those who suffer the most when it comes to paying for long-term care. Very few people can afford $6,000, $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 a month for round-the-clock home care. Very few people can afford $10,000 a month, $8,000 a month for a memory unit. Very few people can afford $9,000 or $10,000 a month for a nursing home. Very few people can afford an extra $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 just for regular assisted living a month. Very few people can afford that for very long. They're not protected. They're the ones that are sitting in the middle. They're the ones that when I do a workshop, my workshop is not made up of people with, when I do workshops, that have $50 million in the bank or that have $800 a month of income and no house. The people I'm talking to, My average client has a house, maybe $100,000 to $150,000 in the bank, and less than $3,500 a month of income. So when you stop and think about all the levels of care that there are, if we start talking about those levels of care, and we start talking about what it costs and who's going to pay and how we're going to pay for it, the great group of people in the middle are the ones who wind up losing everything. Every year, 500,000 families in the United States are impoverished as a result of one person going into a nursing home. Now, to become impoverished, you have to have had something prior to that that you lost. So that group in the middle, those 500,000 families that lost everything to the cost of long-term care, they're the ones that were unprotected. They're the ones that either got bad advice, got no advice, believed it was never going to happen, believed it wouldn't happen to them, believed it could happen to somebody else but not them. Just believe that. I read an article, and somewhere I have it in my little stack of things here. Okay. Oh, here it is, right here. I actually got this out of my doctor's office the other day and asked him if I could steal his magazine, and he said yes. But I read something in here that I knew, but I want to read it to you. This is from what magazine? This is Money Magazine, okay? And it's about dementia and all that kind of stuff, and it's talking about all of that. But one of the statistics in here, and it's about 24-hour care. And I want to find it, and I want to read it to you because I think it's important, is that the average time, by the way, I'm going to read two statistics for you. 36% of all family caregivers have had their career damaged by taking care of a loved one. But the one I really wanted to get to, and I wanted to get to this because I hear it all the time, the average time between actual onset of Alzheimer's and diagnosis is 2.5 years. The average time between diagnosis of Alzheimer's and death is between 6 and 8 years. That means people who have Alzheimer's, and we're just talking about Alzheimer's, not all dementia, went undiagnosed for 2.5 years. Now, are you telling me nobody noticed? This is why people in the middle, the unprotected, wind up losing everything. Because as they go along and they have a chance to notice stuff, they don't. They pretend it's not happening. Oh, it's just a little memory. It's just a little old age. It's just a little this. It's a little that. When all the clues that went on, nobody wanted to pay attention to. It's just chalked up to getting older or general forgetfulness, or, you know, mom just has a little memory problem. So the average time between actual beginning of Alzheimer's and diagnosis is 2.5 years. That's why people in the middle wind up losing everything. That's why nobody believes they need to become protected, because somehow they're going to escape this wrath, this tornado that's going to blow through their lives. People at the top don't have to worry about it. People at the bottom don't have to worry about it. My people, the people that come to my workshops, the people that I've seen day in and day out for 25 years, the people with a house and a little bit of money and three kids that they like, those are the people that wind up losing everything. I had somebody bring in, they went to a workshop, And I'm not going to tell you whose workshop, but they went to a workshop on long-term care planning and Medi-Cal planning, and it was done by an attorney, and the handout from the attorney said, you got to be careful of the 5-year look back in his material. Well, there is no 5-year look back in California. Not today. There might be someday, but there's not today. You have to make sure that you're getting information that's correct. You have to make sure that you have a toolkit put together. I cannot tell you how important it is to have the right toolkit. I talked about this a little bit last week, I think, about, you know, when I talked about how to replace a light bulb. You have to have the right toolkit. You have to have the right set of stuff so that when this begins to happen, you're prepared. After it's happened, sometimes it's too late. I'm not an attorney, don't practice law, I don't give legal advice. There's a probate code section 3100 that elder law attorneys know about. I know about, lots of people who do this, I know what it is. And there are lots of things called 3101 petitions that are done all the time all over California. And the reason they're done is because one spouse has lost it, become disabled physically or mentally, and the documents they have are not adequate for the well spouse to take care of them and their assets. And so they wind up in court having an attorney try to protect all the assets of the well spouse from the cost of long-term care of the ill spouse. And yet they had documents, and yet they had stuff, but they still wind up in court because they didn't have the right toolkit. They had the right toolkit maybe to deal with probate, but they didn't have the right toolkit to deal with long-term care and to deal with all the things that come with that. All the decisions we never thought we were going to have to be making, we are now having to make, and all of a sudden we find that we're unprotected because we didn't do the things that we needed to do so that when the day comes that we need to take care of grandma, we've got everything in place. The toolkit is in place. The people are in place. The plan is in place. All of that is in place, and we wind up wondering what happened. Almost everybody that comes into my office that's ever dealt with long-term care knows somebody who has lost a lot of money paying for it. I've had lots of people come into my office who have lost a house and all their money paying for long-term care, and I have to look them in the eye, and they'll tell you. They'll look there, you'll look you in the eye and say, I was told there was nothing I could do. And I'm telling you, there's lots you can do. Whether you choose to do it or not is another story. Once you've lost it, you can't get it back. There's no way to get it back. And so it's important that you identify what class are you in. Are you in the protected class? Do you have $40 million in the bank and therefore you don't care about this? Or you have $25,000 a month of income so you don't care about this? That's okay. That's good. Are you in the we don't have anything, we don't have a house, we don't have any money, we have very low income class? That's taken care of. If you're somewhere in between, what's your toolkit? What is it? I don't know what it is. You have to tell me. I don't know. You have to figure out how you're going to be protected and how you're going to deal with this issue when it arrives. And you need to be able to know that before it happens. I wish I could just run a tape recorder of all the people that I talk to during a day or come in during a day, or the elder law attorneys I know of that I talk to on a regular basis, and the people that walk into their office and what they've been told they can do and what they can't do and how much money they've lost. Or even worse, everybody out there looking for Plan C. What do I mean when I say Plan C? Well, Plan A is do nothing. Plan B is do something. But Plan B sometimes costs money. So there must be a Plan C. There must be some other way to do this. And people spend their entire lives looking for Plan C until all the money's gone. Well, there isn't a Plan C. There's either a plan or no plan. There's either a process or no process. There's either correct documents or incorrect documents. There's either money to pay for it or there's not money to pay for long-term care. You have to be able to go through all of those things. And you have to have the toolkit that allows you to deal with that. If you've never been to one of my workshops, get to one. Sign up for one. You can do it online on my webpage, assetsandaging.com. If you're dealing with this today, then give me a call. Get in to see me. Make sure that you've taken care of what you need to take care of. I cannot tell you how important it is that you first determine, am I in the protected or unprotected class? Okay? And then how am I going to deal with all of that? How am I going to deal with what's coming? How am I going to deal with the hurricane that's blowing at my house? I wish I could read you all the things that's in this Money Magazine article and some of these families. I wish I could talk to you about all the things that go on in here, but the problem is that it in some cases it does a pretty good job of pointing out what the problems are, but it doesn't do a really good job of talking about what the solutions are, other than I hope you have a lot of money. At the end of the day, the article from Money Magazine, by the way, I'll give you the title. You can probably look it up online. Let me find the title of the article just a second. It's called Coping with Aging's Costliest Challenge. It's from the December issue of Money Magazine. Coping with Aging's Costliest Challenge is the title of the article. And I wish I could go through all of it, but I just don't have time to read it to you. But it's something worth finding and reading. And it talks a lot about what the challenges are. It doesn't talk a lot about what the solutions are, other than it costs a lot of money. So again, I want you to focus on, as you look at your own life, the life expectancy of an 80-year-old woman is 9.33 years. So let's say it's almost a decade. So if in determining if I'm in the protected or unprotected class, if grandma is 80 years old and needs care for 5 of her last 10 years, and that care costs $50,000 a year, I'll pick a lower than average number, then that means her care is going to cost $250,000. So you have to look at what you have and say, okay, based on that number alone, am I in the protected class or the unprotected class? If grandma's care is going to cost $80,000 a year for 5 years before she dies, then that's $400,000 for grandma's care or my spouse's care or my wife, whoever it is, my mom's care. Am I in the protected or unprotected class? I don't know. You have to ask. If I'm going to be in a nursing home for 4 years, which I've had lots of people in nursing homes for 4 years, and that costs me $100,000 a year, do I have the money to pay for that? Now, so am I protected or unprotected? Now throw into that you're married and you still have a spouse at home that needs to pay the mortgage or the property taxes or the light bill or the car or the insurance or all the other things that go with continuing to live at home. So now throw into that mix the cost to you still have the well spouse still needs money. Or now throw into that a caregiver that has to take a year or two away from their job or has to help supplement mom's care with money out of their pocket that they were trying to save up for their own retirement. So as you begin to look at long-term care and the costs and the issues that go with it, I want you to ask yourself, am I in the protected class or am I in the unprotected class? Which one is it? And I don't know the answer for you. If you determine that you're in the unprotected class and would like to change that, then give me a call today and get in to see me. 800-999-8007. The consultation is free. 800-999-8007, or go to my website, assetsandaging.com. Assets, A-S-S-E-T-S, and A-N-D, aging, A-G-I-N-G.com. Sign up for a workshop, ask me a question online, get signed up for my newsletter, or ask for an appointment. But help's available. If long-term care for you puts you in the unprotected class, you can change that, and you can change it anytime you want to. We'll be back in a few minutes. During the break, give me a call at 800-999-8007. 800-999-8007. Get in to see me. We'll be back after a short break. Don't go away, right here on Assets and Aging. Welcome back to Assets and Aging, Affording the Future, the live local show that's all about the issues of aging. Glad to have you with us. Again, my name is Bob Scrivano, your host here for 18 years on KFBK, talking about senior issues, issues of aging, stuff that impacts us. And you know, during the week, I collect all kinds of stuff. And I like to talk about some of that, and I usually wind up with more than I can talk about. But I want to talk about something that's outside my realm of expertise. But I want to talk about it anyhow, and it has to do with a new Labor Department rule. And it's something you probably haven't read about, or you may not know about much, but it's going to change the way brokers in America operate, and lots of people think to the detriment of the middle class. If you've learned anything from me so far in my lifetime, it's that I'm about the middle class. I'm reading, there's all kinds of stuff. There's a big article here. Let me give you two sources for more information on this. March 4th, Wall Street Journal front page. Friday, March 4th, Wall Street Journal front page. Brokers brace for tighter standard. That's one great source for this. Okay, another great source, and the one I want to talk about a little bit, is from Forbes. It's an opinion piece in Forbes from March 4th, 2016. That was online. It's a writer for Forbes writing about this new rule that is coming down, that if you're middle class, and you have a broker, a small broker, you know, he's been your broker for years. I don't know, he may or may not have talked to you about this. Again, I'm not a securities licensed, so everything I'm talking about here is my opinion only and based on what I've learned, but I think it's going to impact a lot of people in the middle class. And it has to do with the Department of Labor regulation, not the SEC, Department of Labor, folks, regulation called the fiduciary rule. And you can probably go Google that and whatever else you want to do. But I'm reading some of this stuff. And this is written by a guy named John Berlau, Berlau, B-E-R-L-A-U. And one of the things he says in the middle of it is, let's see, wait a minute, this was, it's going to impact a lot of financial radio and TV shows. Because basically the rule is, and this is an oversimplification, so go read this on your own. Don't take my word for it. Again, I'm not securities licensed, so this is just my opinion as a person. Don't take what I said here and do anything about it. Go talk to your broker. It's going to make a huge difference between fee-based brokers and commission-based brokers. There are two basic categories of stockbrokers. One, you pay a fee every year. They get 1.5% or 1% or 2% of your portfolio in fees for advising you. And the other one is they don't charge you anything off the top. They make a commission based on selling you stock from, you know, Acme Auto Repair or somebody, whoever it is. this is going to impact the commission-based people, this rule, and there are lots of people who think it will impact them a lot and may force brokers to move over to become fee-based, which in the long run could hurt the middle class, the small investor. And it deals with IRAs and 401k accounts. And it's changing the way brokers are classified and what they have to do and when they can charge a fee and when they can't and when they can charge a commission and when they can't. And it's really very vague. When you begin to read about it, it's really very vague. And again, if you're a middle-class investor and you have a broker, go talk to your broker about this, but you need to find out about this rule. One of the things that this could really hurt people is financial shows. Lots of you listen to financial shows. You know, there are financial shows on TV. There's financial shows wherever. So let's say that, and there's an interpretation of this rule among many people. Again, go read for yourself. That if somebody on the radio, I don't do financial advice, I'm doing this as an example, says, I think you should go out and buy energy in the energy sector. I think the energy sector is a good sector in general. The minute I say, and one of the companies in the energy sector that we like is Acme Solar. I hope there's no Acme Solar somewhere. I'm making up that name. Now I have a fiduciary relationship with you, even though I'm just on the radio and talking. My relationship to you has changed. And that's going to be true of your broker and unless you're a fee-based broker. And what it's going to do is, and a lot of people believe this, I happen to be one of them just from my own reading, that this and listening to brokers speak who are in my office, and as I listen to them talk, they're in my office building, they are really concerned about this. They're all small brokers, you know, that handle the average Joe. Remember my whole first half hour on the protected and the unprotected? Well, the guy worth $100 million is going to still have his same broker talking about his IRAs and 401ks. The guy with $50,000 in his IRA, the broker, because the compliance costs of this, because there's all kinds of compliance stuff that goes with this, are going to be huge. The small broker may not want to mess with the person that only has $50,000 in assets in an IRA, because his compliance costs are going to be more than whatever the commission is he or she is making. So if you're a small investor, and you should go talk to your broker and make sure you understand what's coming. As of this program, I do not believe the rule has actually been put in force, but is expected to be at any time. So it's called the fiduciary rule. It's the Department of Labor. I would strongly suggest if you're the average Joe Dokes out there, you go check on this, because if you wind up having to move to a fee-based broker and you're in your IRA account only makes you 2% a year, but you're paying the broker a 2% fee, then how much did you really make? So it's going to become, an important issue for the average middle-class investor. I think you should be talking to your brokers about it and see what impact it has on you. Remember, I am not a broker. Everything here is just my opinion only. I'm not telling you to do anything other than I think if you do have a brokerage account with IRAs or 401ks in it, you should talk to your broker about the impact that that may have on him and you as his client. I think it's something to understand. My understanding is the comment period has been closed. The Department of Labor is going through with this, even though there are people in Congress opposed to it. They're just, as far as I can tell, the rule is a done deal, but you talk to your broker. So again, it's one of those things that if you're trying to stay in the protected class when it comes to long-term care, your ability to make money in your IRAs or 401ks could become really, really, really important. If you're in a 401k at work, ask them what impact this rule will have on your ability to move money around within your 401k at work, if any. May have none, but you need to know about it because it's a rule that is going to impact primarily the middle class and the small to average investor. So just passing that on as information, go talk to your broker. The other thing I want to talk about a little bit today, are care contracts. I want to talk about caregivers again. I love talking about caregivers. I have all kinds of articles sitting here on my desk about caregivers. In fact, I'm just rattling a newspaper trying to look at one here. Caregivers are people who put out enormous amounts of energy taking care of someone they love. Enormous amounts of energy and time and money. And even in the best of times, somebody can wind up out of goodwill in an attempt to help, not getting themselves in trouble. I had somebody in my office recently who is taking care of a parent. And the doctor has told them that that parent needs 24-hour day care. And they're not able to give them 24-hour day care, so they try to do the best they can. So they've put another relative in the house sometimes who sleeps there overnight, doesn't pay rent, is living in this person's house without paying rent. In exchange for that, they're trying to help out. And the doctor has said that this person shouldn't be left alone. And what they're doing is, out of the best of intentions, they're trying to do the best they can. Because the parent doesn't want a caregiver in the house, and the parent doesn't want to go to assisted living or a boarding care or something. So they're trying to do something out of the goodness of their heart that could wind up causing trouble for them down the road. And the reason why is there is this thing called elder abuse. Most elder abuse is family members. Not all of it, but most of it. It's a son, it's a daughter, it's a nephew, it's a granddaughter, it's a niece, it's somebody. And so what's happening here is that if this parent, and by the way, this is so common, I can't tell you how common it is. If somebody winds up calling Adult Protective Services because grandma goes wandering down the street and one of the neighbors has to keep bringing her back home because she can't remember where she is or how to get back into her house, or a doctor realizes that even though he said you need 24-hour day care, he realizes that his patient is not getting 24-hour day care, or it could be somebody at the bank, it could be anybody. All of a sudden, there's a knock on the front door. And we have a world of hurt. Because their Adult Protective Services is going to be asking that family a lot of questions. Why did you leave your loved one alone, even though you knew you weren't supposed to do that? Well, I've got a job to go to. That doesn't matter. And if you talk to elder law attorneys who do conservatorships, they'll tell you it is not an uncommon event to actually have that loved one taken out of the house by Adult Protective Services and a conservatorship ordered in which a stranger is put in charge of mom or dad's estate. It happens on a fairly regular basis if you talk to elder law attorneys. So making sure that that person is protected also means making sure that there are documents in place that say, I can take care of that person. So, for instance, the relative that's living in this house for free while trying to take care of, you know, the loved one, is living there for free. One of the first things Adult Protective Services is going to ask this person is, you're getting paid. You're not paying rent. So, in effect, the elder is paying you. Do you have some kind of an agreement that says you get to live here for free? Well, no, not really. So you're taking money. No, I helped it. Well, do you have an agreement that says you get to live here for free in exchange for of taking care of your loved one. Well, no. I'll give you another very common scenario. Mom moves in with the daughter because moms can't stay home alone anymore. So mom moves in. They got a spare bedroom. And mom moves in with the daughter. And mom gets $1,000 a month from Social Security. This is a very common occurrence, maybe with a granddaughter, maybe whoever. And so it's agreed that mom will move into the daughter's house and in exchange for living there and electricity and food and transportation and all of that kind of stuff, that mom pays the daughter $1,000 a month. And which is fine because she doesn't have any other expenses, okay? Because everything else is being provided for by her daughter, and her daughter loves her, and mom loves her daughter, and life is fine. Until one day, mom can't get to the bank anymore. And so for the sake of ease, the daughter just starts depositing mom's Social Security check, endorsing it over, and putting it in the daughter's, her own bank account. No big deal. She's using it just like she has been for years. Until all of a sudden, somebody at the bank notices this. And the banks are mandated reporters. And all of a sudden, there's a knock at the front door. And there's a nice person there from Adult Protective Services, maybe a deputy. And they're going, we understand you've been taking mom's money. And she says, no. Mom lives here. We take care of her. And, well, yeah, but you're depositing her Social Security checks in your bank account. And she said, yeah, mom's been living here for 2 years. We had it, that's how we all did it. And then a nice person from Adult Protective Services is very polite and says, I would like to go talk to your mom. And so the daughter tries to start taking her back to talk to mom. If you don't believe this story, folks, talk to any elder law attorney. They've heard it 1,000 times in different forms. And they said, no, we want to talk to mom alone. So why don't you just point out where mom is and introduce us, and then we'd like to talk to mom alone. So they go back and they talk to mom and they say, mom, you're living in your daughter's house, and mom says, I am? You mean this isn't my house? We already have a problem. If the daughter's lucky, mom says, no, it's okay. It's just I can't get to the bank anymore. And so, yeah, that's the arrangement that we had. But if mom says, well, go talk to my husband. He's in the living room. He'll know. I don't remember. And mom's husband has been dead for 5 years. The daughter has a problem. Because there's nothing in place that says she was entitled to take mom's money for her own benefit. Now, in your mind, in my mind, the daughter was trying to do a good thing and take care of her mom and her home, and in exchange for that, mom was paying her and everybody was happy. But the day comes when mom can no longer confirm that story. And all of a sudden, the daughter has a problem, and it could be a very large problem. A very large problem. And the worst case scenario is that Adult Protective Services takes mom out of the house. The best is they leave her there under a court conservatorship until they can figure it all out. And it happens all the time, folks. And it also happens in this way. Daughter moves into mom's house. Mom's single. Maybe her husband died. Maybe she's divorced. And so she agrees for the sake of, she moves into mom's house and is living there now rent-free. And mom pays her for helping out, running errands. So she's living there rent-free, and maybe mom's paying her $500 or $600 or $700 a month to live there and take care of her. And we go through the same story. And all of a sudden, there's a knock at the door saying, can we talk to your mom? Because we don't understand where your mom's money is going. Somebody at the bank noticed that you go down there and you cash a check all the time out of mom's account for $300 in cash. Well, yeah, I do that because I, you know, that way mom doesn't have an ATM card or a credit card, and it's easier than writing a check all the time every time mom needs something. So I get some cash and then I go buy her, you know, a new blouse or a, you know, whatever. Yeah, but mom can't confirm that because mom doesn't remember anymore. Care contracts are really important with single people. They're really important if you're being taken care of by anybody. Now, if you go hire an agency to take care of you, they have a contract, don't they? So if you hire, you know, home helpers or whoever it is, and they come in and help take care of mom, then there's a contract. And they're getting paid, and in exchange for that payment, there's a contract saying they show up every day. The trouble lies in when a family member becomes the caregiver. Well, but my daughter has my power of attorney. I know that. But where does it say in the power of attorney your daughter can take your money and give it to herself if you're incompetent? Does it say that in there somewhere? Well, no, but I wanted her. Care contracts are really important between single people and a caregiver. And even more so if it's a family member, and even more so if money or what's called payment in kind, like free rent, is being exchanged. It's really, 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 really important. I see people, seen cases, a lot of them, in which mom sells her house, and then she buys or pays off or whatever, you know, pays off her daughter's house and goes to live with her daughter. All of a sudden, she had a bunch of money. She doesn't have any money anymore. She's living with her daughter, and everybody was happy with the relationship. With, you know, it loves her only child. And all that. But where's the care contract? Where's the documents that memorialize that that was supposed to happen? It's a really important concept, folks. I know it's not talked about it much. Sometimes you'll hear them called life care contracts or personal care contracts or those kinds of life care agreements, whatever you want to call them. They're an agreement between the caregiver and the care provider, even if it's a family member, that says, in exchange for doing the following, I get paid X. So that down the road, same scenario, that nice person from Adult Protective Services knocks on the door and says, where does it say you can do this? You have a contract that mom signed 3 years ago when she was still competent that said this is what she wanted to have happen to her. That she wanted to be able to stay out of a facility, and that if that meant giving up her income so that you would take care of her, that's what she wanted. Care contracts are really important. I've even seen them done with married couples where you have blended families. So you got his assets and her assets and his kids and her kids. And all of a sudden, mom is taking care of dad and using dad's money to make the house payment or pay the taxes or whatever. And all of a sudden, dad's kids don't like that because that's their inheritance that's getting spent. I have heard many attorneys talk about circumstances like that. So sometimes they're even used with married couples where you have separate property and separate assets and separate income and separate families. It's a really important concept. It's a really important concept in the LGBT community. It's really, really important in the LGBT community. If you're being taken care of by someone and you're paying that person, even if it's somebody you really care about, there should be some kind of agreement in place that says you are able to get paid for taking care of that person. It's part of being in the protected class, what I was talking about in the very beginning. It's part of what goes with any good toolkit when it comes to long-term care planning. It's a question that needs to be asked and discussed in families. Who's going to take care of grandma? How are we going to pay that person? I had a client once that took 2 years off of work. She was making $100,000 a year. She loved her mom, and she took 2 years off of work. She made no money for 2 years. And when she went back, she didn't get her old job back. She had to start at a different level. I love caregivers. I love what they do. You need to make sure that that person you've picked to take care of you, if that's what you've agreed to, you've given them the tools to protect themselves from anybody saying that something untoward is going on. 800-999-8007. If you want more information on caregiving contracts or agreements, give me a call. We can talk about it. We can get the family together and sit down and have a conversation. It's a good thing that people stay with their families. It's a good thing that your granddaughter gets paid for taking care of you. It's a good thing. You just have to make sure that you've done the things necessary to protect that child or that grandchild from ever being accused of anything untoward. 800-999-8007. Get to one of my workshops. You can go to my webpage, assetsandaging.com. Again, assetsandaging.com. assetsandaging.com. You can sign up for one of my workshops. You can get in to see me. You can sign up for my newsletter. You can make a difference in your life or the life of that loved one that you care about a lot that's beginning to fail, become more frail, or is already disabled or incapacitated in some way, either mentally or physically. Make sure you're in the protected class and you have the toolkit that you need to be able to do what you need to do to protect a lifetime's worth of work. As I've been saying for 18 years on the radio, no one needs to lose everything just because at the end of life they had the wrong disease. Give me a call, 800-999-8007. Go to my website, get to one of my workshops, sign up for my free newsletter, the keyword being free, and stay tuned here every week and listen to my podcast every Wednesday live at noon on assetsandaging.com. You have a wonderful day. We'll see you here again next week. Have a great day. Bye-bye.